Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker, and she uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we grapple with in this conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. Happy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Happy Tuesday, Tyler.
How you doing today?
I'm good. I'm having my own internal smile or laugh at this moment because I think we should probably add to my introduction this week, biggest flirt.
Oh, okay.
Because when I was in junior high, I was nominated biggest flirt. And then again, 4 years later in high school, once again nominated biggest flirt.
Repeat winner.
Okay, here's the thing. I didn't win either time. So I'm just
nominated,
a runner-up.
Nominated.
Yeah,
guys.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the reason I remember this is because my brother sent me a picture today. This is a longer story than it needs to be, but I'm going to share it. One of my brother's best friends bought my childhood house, which is so fabulous because then he raised his girls there, which we love because our house has just been a family house now forever. But they're doing a remodel on a place that my parents did a remodel on, you know, a million years ago. So they stripped down the walls to the studs, and on one of the studs is my name that I clearly wrote myself, and then it says world's biggest flirt.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
Yeah, and so that was a timely reminder today because Valentine's Day is a couple days away, and it's all about love and flirting and attraction, and so I'm going to come from that place of the biggest flirt, second running biggest flirt, clearly not the world's best. But I want to talk today about kind of those lost arts of flirting and being exciting in your relationships, bringing in a little bit of spice to our day to day. Because I know every year you give me a hard time for wanting to push the Valentine's buzz. I know that it's a commercial holiday. I know it's about selling cards and chocolate, but that's only if you allow yourself to just be boring and fall into that idea that Valentine's Day is just a commercial holiday and I have to buy the flowers or the chocolate or my wife will get mad at me or my girlfriend will get mad or my boyfriend will be disappointed. Like if you buy into that, that's just your fallback to not participating as fully as you can in how much fun it can be to be in a relationship with someone. I'm going to stand by that. That our anger towards Valentine's Day is just a reminder that a lot of us are really lazy when it comes to maintaining the passion and erotic experiences that can be in our relationships. So I'm not going to talk about where to take your loved one to dinner or what are some fun things to do to, you know, spice it up at home. I'm going to go a different direction today, and I want to talk about how to reignite some of that passion that you felt for your significant other back at the beginning that you've let kind of wane and go away. Because another cultural story that we tell is that after about 36 months of a relationship, most people kind of have a die-off of those original feelings, those intense, lusty, loving feelings that are fueled by these hormones that rush through our bodies that cause us to want to mate with others. Once those kind of ebb down a little bit, we kind of fall into a routine of comfort with our significant other. So another cultural story is, and then you just kind of ho-hum, you love them, you're there, but there's no real spice to it. But that's also just a cultural story because there's a lot of research that supports this idea that it's actually a state of mind, this kind of erotic sense of attraction to your significant other that can be reignited with just a few tweaks to how you interact with each other, that you can kind of light that fire. Little throwback to the doors. You can light that fire by just bringing in some novelty to the relationship, certain smells, essences to the relationship that are actually pleasing, and music, and different things that stimulate in our brain that pleasure center that you tapped into when you first met your significant other. Because, you know, divorce is not 50% of all marriages, but divorce is a part of a lot of people's reality, and it's also something that looms heavily in a lot of marriages. I think a lot of marriages get into a place where they kind of white knuckle it through and hope we don't go through a divorce, which is setting yourself up to kind of losing that magic and ending up getting divorced. Marriages have to be this vibrant, energetic, plant, this living thing that you nurture all the time. And so couples that enter into marriage with this thrive sense and not this panicked, oh, I hope we don't lose it feeling, those who go through marriage with this thrive sense of what can I always do to help nurture these relationships, these feelings, those marriages stay vital throughout the whole course of their marriage. You know, couples into 50 years of marriage have reported still having very erotic, passionate relationships together. And it's about mindset and it's about commitment. So we're going to bust a few of the old stale ideas about how to spice things up in your marriage. You know, you can bring flowers, that's okay. You can bring chocolate, that's nice. But if you really want to break the boredom cycle, and it's really boredom that's at the heart of most relationship issues. Because if you get bored in a relationship, everything about that relationship bugs you. If you're bored in a relationship, the way they put on their socks will bug you. The way that they make food or chew their food will bug you. How much or how little money you have will bug you. How they parent or how they interact or how they sound like their mother when they talk will bug you when you're bored. But when you're not bored, when you're really excited about a relationship and you're vested in it, nothing bugs you. They can do whatever and it all looks sexy and cute and funny and aren't you the best? And so boredom's the thing we have to attack. Boredom is the issue that we have to address in most relationships. And boredom happens when we get into a routine. And routines feel great and comfortable at the beginning. You know, everyone likes to have their significant other and you can lay on the couch and watch Netflix and eat sushi in your bathrobe and it feels kind of fun and comfortable. But after a while, that starts to become a rut and a routine that can set off into boredom. We call it hedonistic adaptation. Hedonistic adaptation is the most exciting thing you've ever experienced will become boring after a certain period of time. And so you are driven then to find something else that will give you that same hedonic pleasure, which is why people look for affairs or look for other relationships or look for other things that spice them up, because we become hedonistically adapted to our relationships that started off being so fun. And we start to believe that the relationship itself has died and we need something new and novel. But the truth is you've just gotten bored of the same old with that original partner. And that can be turned around. So in honor of Valentine's Day, I came across a blog. Actually, the blog was sent to me. I will be totally honest about it. The blog was sent to me, and it was written by a local woman, Alex Malyshev, and she goes by Lady Galaxy in her stage world, and she is a burlesque dancer, a burlesque performer, and the blog that she wrote was called Five Things I Learned from Doing Burlesque, and so, of course, I had to read every word of it, and I realized that burlesque is a great avenue for addressing hedonistic adaptation. Because I don't know if I can talk couples into maybe doing a striptease at home or starting their flirting skills or, you know, changing things up too wildly at home, but maybe I can encourage you to take your significant other to spend an evening watching a little burlesque, which will spice up your moods and maybe spice up your life and inspire you to behave in different ways. Because burlesque has been around since the 17th century. I'll give you a little history, but burlesque has been around since the 17th century. It actually started in Italy, and the word burlesco means to mock or to joke. And so early burlesque was actually this kind of campy, over-the-top costumes, racy, you know, small costumes barely covering the body. But it actually mocked the elite and the pompous, those who went to operas or to ballets. And so they would do these over-the-top kind of mockeries or satires of the elite's events. But then in the 1860s, a group from England came to the United States. They were called the British Blondes, and they introduced burlesque as a striptease show to the audiences in the United States. And what's interesting about that is that it wasn't scandalous because these women were taking off their clothes. What was scandalous was that these women had large fleshy legs and wide hips and a large chest and put themselves in these tiny costumes. And that's what upset the people that were seeing burlesque for the first time, was that these women were so comfortable in their bodies in these skimpy outfits. And how could they possibly parade themselves? Burlesque continued on in the United States and it had its heyday around World War II with the pinup girls. And again, you know, wide hips, fleshy legs, large chests, and became kind of the icon of beauty in this country. And so although burlesque kind of waned, it had its heyday and has waned over the years, there's still a whole underground, I don't know if underground's the right word, but a whole world of burlesque that goes on, classes that people go to, shows that kind of happen on the outskirts of town or in different parts of the community. And people come out and experience burlesque because it makes them feel a little naughty and it makes them feel a little embarrassed, but also a little alive in ways that they don't generally feel alive. So my guest today is Lady Galaxy. And she's here to talk about her journey to finding her inner burlesque dancer and to talk about Glitterotica, which will be performing this weekend at the Guild in San Luis Obispo, a Valentine's event for all. It'll be burlesque and drag and cabaret. So you are listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. And if you haven't already guessed it, today's show might be a little on the risque side if you are worried about who is listening in. So I just want to forewarn you a bit. But you are invited to be part of the conversation, 805-781-3875. You can find previous shows at kcbx.org. You can send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. And you can follow us on Instagram, elizabeth_TRT. But we are going to be opening up the phone lines a bit. I look forward to see where this takes us. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. That's the, what would it be, the grand finale for Glitterotica, that song?
Yeah, that's one of them. That's one of them.
A little taste of what's to come this weekend. Welcome, Alex Milichev, Lady Galaxy, to the show.
Thank you so much.
I'm so glad I came across your blog, or your blog was sent to me, because I knew nothing about burlesque at all. You know, I've heard the term, but I knew nothing about it until I read your article. And now my curiosity is so piqued. I'm really looking forward to learning more about it and coming to the show. But before we jump into burlesque and the show coming up, can you talk about how you found your way to becoming Lady Galaxy?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it's really common that people don't know what burlesque is, because there was a time I didn't know what burlesque was. And my first show, I remember... In fact, this is a funny story. It was one of the first dates I went on with my husband, and I was a professional ballroom dancer at the time. It was like between college and my first like professional job. I was like, I'm just going to be a ballroom dancer for some time. And my coworkers were like, you should come to our burlesque show. I didn't even ask what that meant. I didn't know what it was. And it ended up being at a place called Hamburger Mary's. Again, I had no idea what that was. For those of you who don't know, that's a gay bar. Okay. And so I brought my now husband, then boyfriend, to this gay bar, not even telling him what it was going to be because I had no idea. And at the very last minute, their stagehand gets sick. So they ask me to fill in to like help clear the stage and bring out the props. And so I have to leave him alone all night in this bar during the burlesque show, which ended up being, you know, women seductively taking their clothes off. And it was really, really awesome. And I had a lot of mixed emotions about it. I remember kind of filtering through my emotions that night, like something about this felt weird or wrong. And yet it's not wrong because I know these women and I know that they're very wholesome, kind women. And they're doing this and something feels weird. So it was just a lot for me to unpack. Mm-hmm. And I think it just goes back to kind of what you were mentioning before. I grew up in the Midwest. It was kind of conservative. Our sex ed class was, you know, don't have sex.
Yeah, lots of shame, yeah. Lots of fear.
Don't have sex. And I guess just the culture that I was surrounded with was as a human being, you should be valued for your intellect and what's between, you know, what's in your head, right? Not for your beauty. So it always just kind of felt wrong or degrading, I guess, to be seen as beautiful. And for that reason, I always hid. That, in addition to that, I don't know if other women listening might connect with this, but if you're used to people making comments about your beauty, there's this safety thing that you try to force by hiding yourself, mm-hmm. right? Because it feels unsafe to constantly be called out like, oh, you're a beautiful young woman. Great, thanks. Like, I really didn't ask for you to say that to me. And now I want to wear black baggy clothes all the time. So I just had a lot of discomfort around it.
But it's interesting because you talked about being a ballroom dancer, which is not known for its baggy clothes.
No, no. And
so how did you?
I did not love what we would wear. You know, and even in, because I was a ballet dancer for a long time, okay. and the outfits were, you know, leotard and tights. But in that setting, it was to see your body in order to correct your form. And there was sort of this difference between being objectified, mm-hmm. like being objectified and seen as a sex icon, if you will, like mm-hmm. someone like a beautiful woman. That was just really uncomfortable to me.
So if you were doing it in the form of ballet, which is very mechanical in almost its lines and positions, or in ballroom dancing, which is also about lines and right precise movements, that you're not thinking about the body as a sexual an object. You're thinking of the body as almost like a mechanical tool that you're utilizing.
Yeah, and you're definitely communicating an art, right? In mm-hmm. ballet, you're communicating emotions. In ballroom, you're communicating emotions. And a lot of times love, especially if you're doing something like the tango. But it's definitely not as risque as in burlesque, where you're communicating a little bit more, right? A little bit more of that eroticism. Mm.
It comes more than from this authentic spot of your soul and not just your trying to put out a performance.
That's a really great question. And I see what you're saying there, the difference between like putting on the mask and really bearing it all.
Yes.
My very first burlesque performance was a comedic one. And I think that it's because I wasn't yet comfortable with really being vulnerable. And so I hid a little bit behind the comedy aspect. I was like, look, I can do something smiley and fun and also strip and people like it and it's fun. And I've found that throughout my like performance history in burlesque, I've started to challenge myself more and more to do those really vulnerable pieces. Mm-hmm. For example, I felt really called to do a piece where there was a lot of like breathing and heavy breathing that really brought in that feeling of like the erotic feeling. Mm-hmm. That was really scary for me. Not something I would have done my first time.
And just going back to your training as a professional dancer, you're kind of putting on that role. You're not bringing yourself, Alex, to a ballet piece. You're putting on whatever that character is for the ballet. And I would think even though you become Lady Galaxy in burlesque, it's you're manifesting your sensuality.
Yeah, and you get to explore a different part of you, I think. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people's stage personas is a part of them that they just really want to explore. And in my case, Lady Galaxy, you know, kind of, she's very elegant and sexy and sensual. And that's something that I really love to lean into. Mm-hmm. For other people, it's more comedic and they have those more comedic names. And for some people, it's really raunchy. Right. And I won't mention those names, but you can.
Yes, the names say enough.
The names say enough.
Well, and it's interesting because when I was reading about burlesque, I learned that there are three different styles of burlesque. There's kind of the cabaret burlesque that is what you see like when you think of Moulin Rouge or the big French chorus lines and big hats and fishnet stockings. And then there's striptease, which I always related to. The only striptease burlesque artist I'd ever heard of was it Dita Van Tees? And she is a current modern day burlesque performer and wears, you know, big costumes and hats and kind of over the top and then stripping down. It's a very erotic striptease. And then there is traditional burlesque, which is the satire I talked about earlier, which is kind of the mockery and making fun of and kind of poking at things that are out in more of the elite world around us. And so knowing that there's this whole kind of these different genres of burlesque, how did you first come to the stripping part? Like what? Because I know you went to the first show, but then was it the next day you said, this is for me? And how did your boyfriend, now husband, kind of come along on this journey with you?
That's a great question. When I moved to San Luis Obispo, actually the show that I saw in San Luis Obispo was my second show that I ever went to, and it was Slow Tease, and I loved it. At that point, it was a very immediate, yes, this is next for me. I'm the type of performer that I really like to try new things, and then eventually I feel like I've explored what I can explore through that art form, and I'm ready for the next challenge. Mm-hmm. And burlesque was a huge challenge for me, and I knew it was going to be. So I was totally on board. I was like, yes, I'm in. I think what made it easier for me was we had rehearsals with just the troupe. Mm-hmm. So my first time really doing that strip tease was for them. And they're super supportive. And I saw other people do it first. And it kind of just created this really safe space where it felt almost normal. Mm-hmm. Like not, you know, not really outside the room. Yeah, of course, we're just going to get naked in here. It's not a big deal. Like, it's just a thing. And my husband's been totally supportive of it. It's just an art.
Well, and as I talked about at the top of the show, all marriages benefit from something a little spicy, even when it feels a little scary. I think we start to hold on to our marriages so tight, or we become so kind of laissez-faire about that relationship as if it's always going to be there, that we stop kind of pushing each other into kind of places or things that make us feel a little nervous to be around each other. Because I think about, you know, I told my husband, hey, we're going to go see this show that my guest is doing on Friday night. And he's like, okay, I'll do that. What is it? And when I mentioned to him, I could see in his eyes, like, that's not the kind of thing we do. You know, like his instant. But he's usually game for anything I drag him into. But I have to admit, when I was, you know, thinking about this, this is not out in our comfort zone. I don't know what our friends would think of us, you know, going to check this out this weekend. But it's been fun and exciting to even say, hey, Friday night, we're going to this show. And though it's just that little bit of spice can make everything start to be a little more fun. Then you start to be a little flirty with each other. And we can't stop flirting with our significant others, because flirting is that thing that makes couples want to be romantic with each other, that flirting, that letting someone know, hey, you might be able to be with me, but I'm not sure. You got to try a little harder. And we tend to let go of those flirting skills once we've put a ring on our finger.
I love that you're talking about flirting, and also that you mentioned discomfort. And it's almost like flirting and that expression, that free expression of love and, hey, I'm into you, is on the other side of discomfort for a lot of people.
Yes.
And I love doing things that make me uncomfortable. And so if people are coming to the show and it's their first time and they're a little uncomfortable, that's perfect, because it's more than just, oh, it's going to be sexy. There's something to unpack in that discomfort that is probably something you talk about on the show so much. It's just these huge life growth things. Like, why? Why is it uncomfortable? Right. And it's different for everyone. It might be a body issue. Like, I don't think my body is beautiful. Wow, that's something we can really look at. Or I think it's wrong to flirt. Maybe you think that you're leading someone on and manipulating.
Which we were told when we were young.
Right.
You don't lead them on.
Don't lead them on. Yeah. And you know what? That's another story that we can unpack. So that discomfort, you know, like what is there to life besides like growing, right? Like, this is why we're alive, to grow and to do these uncomfortable things and discover ourselves in the process.
Because that's when we feel alive. It's, you know, ironic, but those moments when we almost die and when we're really turned on to something are the two moments we feel most alive. And we try to avoid both of those things, which is interesting. The older we get, the more risk averse we become, that we don't want to do things that we might die doing, and we don't want to do things that might make us feel ashamed or embarrassed or a little nervous. And so we miss out on the two core opportunities to really grow and feel alive, thriving. And it's common. And I think that's something that I really want to point out, that it's common for most marriages. It's more common for marriages to kind of fall into that rut of comfort, and we get each other and we don't need that. And I've listened to so many couples say, we're not into that. We don't do that. We don't do Valentine's Day, or we don't need that kind of romance. And they look at each other like they know. But each of them inside are dying a little bit, because they do want that on a level that they've probably stopped even recognizing, which is sad unto itself, because we get one run at this life. And if you turn off that desire at any point, you're missing out on a huge part.
Yes.
If you're just tuning in, this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. My guest today is Alex Milachev. She is also known as Lady Galaxy, and she's a burlesque dancer. And we're kind of talking about, one, the art of burlesque and how to spice up your lives, and two, the Glitterotica show that will be performed this weekend at the Guild. And it's cabaret, it's burlesque, cabaret, and drag performances. And we're going to talk about both of those. But the thing that drew me first to having you on the air was the article that you wrote, the blog you wrote about five things I learned about burlesque. And so I was hoping we could go through those five things you learned and talk a little bit about what burlesque has meant for you.
Thank you. Yeah.
All right. Let's start with number one.
Number one.
I've learned to celebrate my beauty.
Oh, yeah. That was, I'm opening it now on my phone so I can remember. That was a really hard one for me. And it's because, and if you read the blog post, you'll see this little story. As a young woman, I've had many instances where I would be walking down the street with a friend of mine. We would see another woman who was perhaps wearing something a bit revealing. And my friend would say, wow, can you believe that she's wearing that, right? Like, there's all these really negative comments about other women who portray themselves in that way. And
why is she wearing such a short skirt?
Yeah,
like, why is she with that wild hair?
Yeah, what is she doing with that? And it's almost like, and again, I'm not an expert. This is just my personal experience. It's as if there was this feeling that they're just doing that to manipulate men into getting what they want. Mm. And
so woman is vixen.
Yes, yes. Like, and this is this raw, it's wrong. And one of the things that I learned in burlesque was how to see a beautiful woman and just say, wow, she is so beautiful. It's been life changing because the ways in which I judged other women, I assumed they were judging me as well, which made me not want to showcase my beauty. I thought that if I showcased my beauty, these women would hate me and think I'm being manipulative.
You'd be that girl.
I would be that girl. And that's
which
what I talked
about. Which
we
all grew up hearing that word.
Right.
Don't be that girl.
Yes.
And burlesque is all about being that girl.
Yes.
Right? Teasing that out to the world. It's all about the flirt and the tease. And one of the things I loved about that section was you wrote, seeing a beautiful woman, I saw her more as a work of art.
Yes.
And that I had the gift of seeing this beautiful work of art. And that really has stayed with me since I first read it. What a different way of seeing anyone who's, and everyone is beautiful in some way, and to look at every person you see as daily as presenting themselves
yes.
as a work of art. Here's who I am.
Oh, and there are some women that curate their art daily. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and as, again, here, I used to make fun of these women, like, oh, they spend so much time on their makeup in the morning. I'm so low maintenance, right? But now it's just this complete 180 because those women are just really committed to their art. They wear these beautiful lipsticks. They dye their hair. They wear these outfits that are just so visually appealing and stunning. And I feel so lucky that I get this piece of art that walks around each day.
Performance art.
Yeah.
Well, and it's, I think it would be such a wonderful, healthy way of reframing for many women who spend hours on their makeup and their hair and their clothes because they're insecure and do this as a way of trying to build their self-esteem. And wouldn't it be wonderful to acknowledge that and say, no, this is You're beautiful, and your efforts in doing this enhances that beauty, but you're also okay with none of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's still a piece of art. Like, to be able to, it would be freeing to not only embrace the work of curating a woman's beauty enhanced with all the extras, but then to turn it and just see the raw beauty. So many lessons in just beauty in itself.
Mm.
So the second lesson you learned was I've learned how to assert my boundaries.
Oh, yeah. That was a really hard one for me. I have a hard time speaking up. I'm a very sensitive person. And so in any social situation, if there's conflict, I like to, you know, sweep it under the rug and just calm everything down. Because if there's energy and anger and conflict, I feel uncomfortable.
Mm. So, back to the whole no one wants to feel uncomfortable.
Right. Right. And so it was challenging for me to assert my boundaries. And again, I talk about this in the article, but it started with me. There's a local nude beach, and a friend of mine took me one time, and I was like, this is so great. I love being outside under the sun, in the sand. I feel so Mother Earth, you know, laying naked. But it invites attention.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just how it is. And at first I was angry about that, you know, like, oh, can't I just do this without inviting? I had anger. And sort of the way that I flipped that perspective was the flower and the bee analogy. Mm-hmm. I don't know why that came to me, but I'm like, yeah, I'm a fragrant flower. And that's what it means to be a woman, right? Women are all these flowers with these different fragrances, and the bees are attracted to the flowers, right? And it's not their fault. It's so totally natural, kind of like gazing upon the art. Mm-hmm. The problem is sometimes bees cross boundaries. And when they do, a lot of times we say it's the flower's fault, right, for smelling so nice. And that story had just been drilled into my head. So I learned how to nicely at first assert my boundaries, and if necessary, more firmly assert my boundaries. And I just practiced. I would write down things that I would say and memorize them and then say those things.
So when someone crossed a boundary, you'd know how to shut it down in the moment.
Yeah, because what would happen is I would just kind of go blank, like, oh, I don't know what to say, I don't know what to do. And, you know, freeze was my, I guess, default. So I would just memorize these phrases. So like if someone walked up to me on the beach, I'd say, hey, I appreciate that you came up to me. I really want to just spend the day by myself reading my book. And it was nice meeting you, but I'm just going to do that. Like, you know, have a great beach day. So just little phrases like that. And
but then how did you cut it down from there when you didn't feel like you owed anyone a long explanation?
Oh, you know, just no thank you, right? No thank you. And also knowing your resources, your safety resources. So, you know, I don't want to say like, go and be naked in front of everybody. Like maybe that's not a safe thing, right? I'm very conscious of the safe people in the area. So again, if I go down to the beach, I put myself next to people that I know so that if someone is consistently crossing my boundaries, which has only happened once, I actually just go to someone else and I say, hey, this person is doing this. Will you help me like assert this boundary?
And it's interesting because, you know, women quite often are taught to always be polite, don't make a scene, which works against women if they're attacked or something happens to them uncomfortable because we've been trained to not make a scene or yell or call attention to ourselves or to also always be flattered if someone pays any attention to us. So we were taught that if anyone paid attention, we should be honored that they noticed us. And those are hard lessons, societal lessons, to walk away from or to turn your back on and to realize, no, I get to own who I give my attention to, mm-hmm. or whose attention I seek, and to be able to be assertively dismissive. But then the other side of it is when women assert themselves, quite often they'll be seen as bitchy. And so then that brings up another conflict. So it takes a lot of courage to say, I'm going to assert my boundaries so that I can enjoy myself in a safe way and still not feel that I owe anyone more than I'm willing to share.
It does take a lot of courage. And asserting those boundaries, speaking up in your body will feel like anxiety, right? Mm-hmm. Or like a flutter in your chest. It's like this peaked energy state where you're like, oh God, right? And the only way to get better at that is just to practice it more.
Yeah.
So.
Number three, I've learned how to let myself be sexy without shame.
Yes, shame. I can remember the exact moment that I had this realization that I'm like, okay, well, now that I can assert my boundaries and, you know, I see other women as beautiful, so this means I can just be free to be beautiful, right? And then again, I felt this weird resistance where, again, it was at the beach. I was at the beach, you know, and I saw this man looking at me, and I thought he must be having, you know, very impure thoughts. Like, what if he's thinking these dirty thoughts? Even the word that I used, right? Mm-hmm. Dirty thoughts. And it made me feel dirty. And I, again, noticed, like, wow, that's weird. Why do I feel dirty? This person's not doing anything. They're not crossing my boundaries. They're over there having a wonderful day. I'm over here having a wonderful day. You know, perhaps he's just enjoying watching me.
My beauty.
My beauty, or like, like watching me do something, you know. But for some reason, I feel dirty and gross. And it just kind of dawned on me that there's this like connection between sex and shame. Mm-hmm. And it reminded me of the, again, sex ed. I don't know how many people here on the West Coast have these sorts of sex ed classes, but in the Midwest, this is what happened. We passed around a bowl of candy and everyone unwrapped the same piece of candy and put it back in the wrapper. in order to, at the end, make the point that no one would want to eat the piece of candy that everyone had touched. You know, and like, you're young and impressionable, and that makes sense. And it's reinforced in movies and this weird fascination that a lot of cultures have with virginity, right? Like the untouched woman, the pure woman. It, yeah, it's there.
So for you, being able to find your sexuality and that sexy part of you without feeling embarrassed was freeing.
Totally freeing.
And it's interesting how the culture will continue pushing against you to conform. All right, number four, I've learned how to practice vulnerability beyond nudity.
Oh my God. Okay, I feel like I should just like read what I wrote here because it probably just sounds better in writing. But I just, what happened was people would always say, wow, you take your clothes off on stage. That must be so vulnerable. And hearing people say that to me would just make me reflect and realize that actually it's not the most vulnerable thing in my life, which I thought was funny. Like, yeah, I'm taking my clothes off in front of people. You would think this would be the ultimate. But it wasn't the ultimate. And what it started making me realize is all the things in my life that were way more vulnerable than that. So I'm going to read this little phrase right here. Once I started taking my clothes off on stage, I began to notice how many things in life were way scarier than that. Writing this article, for example, is one of those things. Or sharing with my partner that I'm ashamed of my vagina, but I want to work on it. Or telling the story of my depression and near suicide for the first time in front of my networking group. I got to thinking about what it means to be vulnerable. Yeah, I take my clothes off on stage, but that is nothing compared with admitting my shame and judgment and anger. That's the total emotional full Monty. Naked, in my truth, open, vulnerable to judgment and pain. The full body terror of maybe not being good enough, maybe not deserving of love. But knowing, like with burlesque, that when I let it all hang out, the moment of terror is followed by joy, freedom, and peace with oneself.
So, because once you hang it out there, there's no going back.
Exactly.
Then you have nothing to feel but peace because
exactly.
The story's told. All right, so number five.
Five.
How to make nipple pasties. This is what you've learned from burlesque. And for anyone who wants to have an at-home striptease party, what is the key to making nipple pasties?
All right, so you need something sparkly. Like, you know, you can buy pasties and bedazzle them. It's really just like a circle that covers your nipple. If you want, you can attach a tassel. If you buy them online, they come with like a double-sided stickiness. But the burlesque trick is you buy some electrical tape and you put the electrical tape on your nipple because it peels off easier. And then you get carpet tape. You put the carpet tape on top of the electrical tape and then you put the pasty on top of that. So that's the trick. The trick is to not get the carpet tape on your skin because that's bad news bears.
And my guest today is Lady Galaxy. She's a burlesque dancer, and we're unpacking the world of burlesque and striptease. And I'm going to tie it to your own Valentine's party. I don't know what the word, your own Valentine's celebration coming up on Thursday. Glitterotica will be at the Guild on Friday and Saturday night. But also your own home life can be enhanced with a little flirting and adding a little spice to it. We're going to be opening up the phone lines, 805-781-3875, to continue our conversation about love and flirting and burlesque. And you'll be invited to join in. You are listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Oh, Daddy.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. Our number is 805-781-3875. And with Valentine's Day a couple days away, what are you thinking about? How are you going to bring a little spice to your life? And no fair just saying it's a commercial holiday, we don't do it, or we love each other every day, we don't need a holiday to remind us. Come on now. All relationships need a little bit of the new. Every relationship can benefit from something out of the ordinary. And I don't know if your ordinary is doing a erotic striptease at your home, but for some people there is, because there are classes, right? So there talk are. About how you learn to do this and the community here on the Central Coast that participates, because you're not the sole burlesque dancer on the Central Coast.
No, I am not. There's a bunch of us here. And what's really cool is it's a really welcoming community, and it's a kind community, and it's a safe community, and that's what really drew me in. And we come from a variety of backgrounds. My background is dance. So for me, dipping into burlesque, I had to really learn costuming. I had to learn makeup and how to sort of tell a story with your act and make it fun and engaging. Some people come into it with a very strong acting background, and they'll kind of approach it from that. Some people are singers. I've seen these like singing sort of stripteasy burlesque numbers. So there's a lot of ways that people go about it. And there are some classes here, not a ton. I know like there's a studio down in AG that has pole and burlesque, one up in Paso. There's twerking. Actually, we're going to have Shauna Marie from Ignite Booty School. She's going to be doing a twerking piece. And we're actually going to be offering more classes. It's going to be the Glitterotica School of Burlesque. So I'm stoked about that. That's coming in the future. And that's going to be a variety of things as well, like makeup, costume, stage presence, just feeling comfortable with your body.
I really liked, which is on your website, talking about Glitterotica. It says it's a community of performers, artists, producers collaborating to create transformational events that facilitate sexual liberation in a safe community. And the mission of Glitterotica is to create a community of mixed resources to practice consenting communication, overcome sexual shame, and celebrate pleasure. Starting with our electrifying shows, we plan to expand the community to offer classes, art events, and therapeutic services.
Yes. Well, when I was thinking about this community, I thought about my experience with burlesque, which was more than just, oh, this is fun, naked girls. It was a lot of growth, and I had to look at a lot of the shame that I've carried and my issues with safety and communicating my boundaries. And, you know, I've gone to therapy. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, how cool would it be to usher these people into the community, and then once they're here, create a feeling of safety and give them access to resources that'll help them on this journey. So I would really love to, in the future, partner with therapists. Actually, my hypnotherapist is offering like this sexual liberation process. I don't know much about it, but hearing her describe it, I was like, this is something the community needs. This is a thing that exists. I didn't even know it existed. Wouldn't it be so cool if when people came to the show, they found out that something like this is available to them?
So to awaken, you know, to be awakened, because you're going to go to something that is intended to be stimulating.
Absolutely.
To kind of awaken that erotic sense in all of us. And when that's awakened, what do we do with those feelings? How do we allow ourselves to just enjoy our own pleasure, which is a whole nother topic when you talk about sex education. We don't teach pleasure at all.
No.
We just teach mechanics. 805-781-3875 is our number. And Margie, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi.
I'm an 80-year-old sexy woman, very beautiful. My granddaughters are also beautiful. Have been taught and having a hard time saying this, encouraged to show my beauty, to put clothes together in a way that is striking to the eye, to wear makeup, to make myself attractive. And my three of my granddaughters and two of my daughters have dealt with these same issues. When I was a little girl, like 5 years old, 6 years old, seven, in my church, which was really sucked. I would be playing the piano because I'm a pianist and musician, and I'd be playing the piano, and an elder of the church would come up and put his hand on my thigh. And of course, I was told that he was a nice man. He wouldn't do that. But what I basically want to say is, God, I love this subject so much. I don't want to be in burlesque, but in the last 20 years of my life, maybe longer, I feel pride in being beautiful, and I feel pride in being sexy.
Good for you.
There was a man in my life after my husband died. I've been single for a long time. There was a man who entered my life in a way that I won't discuss right now, but whoa, did he teach me a lot.
Well, there you go, Margie.
Yeah. He just made me feel like, he would be 10 miles away from me going to a workplace, and he'd say, my truck is turning toward you. I can't stand it. What have you done to me?
Whoa.
This was just last year.
Whoa.
So, yeah. So I really am grateful.
And liberated.
And so liberated. I know exactly what is I know almost exactly what men are thinking when they look at me, that they're enjoying me, or that they want to use me.
Well, Margie, I appreciate you calling in and sharing that. So I guess if you're looking for a community of people who have felt sexually liberated, then Margie is a perfect candidate for being part of Glitterotica, even though she already said she won't be part of the burlesque show. But isn't this what we hope for all?
I mean, I hear that she plays piano, and mm-hmm. I don't know. We're a community of artists. So
maybe she's going to play the piano for
this. Yeah, I don't know, you know?
So what just about that then? Isn't to come to that place where you can still feel pride? And as I mentioned at the top of the show, we think in our culture that you're supposed to stop feeling sexual at, 35 or 40. There's a cutoff date, right, for beauty and sexuality. But research doesn't show that to be true, that people into their 80s still feel vibrant, still feel beautiful. And I could imagine, I just noticed for myself, the older I get, the more comfortable I am being naked. When I probably had a lot more to show in my 20s, it took to this point in my life that I actually would say, okay, here I am.
I love that. I'm so inspired by that story. I hope that's me, And one of the things I love about the community is that it is people of many ages and many sizes. And, sometimes you do get those stories of, I'm uncomfortable. I put on some pounds, right? That's so normal. But I really want this to be a space for women and for everyone. I mean, not just women, right? But we're talking about Valentine's Day, and I've always been taught, this is one of the good things my parents taught me, is that Valentine's Day is just about love. And they would actually get their kids presents on Valentine. It's not just about your significant other, but your parents and your children and your pets. It's just love. And self-love is the biggest one. Like, maybe we can celebrate self-love on Valentine's Day and I don't know, just kind of create a community. I want people like Marge coming to the show.
Margie to come out
and show
her stuff.
You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
I want her to wear something awesome and spicy and just like show us how to do it.
So what about, when I was reading the original description of the 1860s burlesque dancers, what was scandalous to those who came to the show was that these women were large. They had fleshy legs and large hips and large chests, and they were putting on these skimpy outfits. And people in the 1860s were horrified by that kind of beauty. So we haven't really come that far as a society that we still are horrified by women who embrace themselves and want to share that and show that. But if, there we have like a size limit on what beauty can be. And it's interesting because the most common size that a woman is in our society is a 12 or 14, for those of you who know your women's dress sizes. Those are the most common sizes. And that's exactly the size of these women who were the early burlesque dancers. And Marilyn Monroe was a size 12. And so how we defined what we could look at as being sensual and sexual and beautiful and igniting that whole part of our being. I mean, that's why we're here.
And I just want to put out that there's so much more you can do with a curvy body than with a really like flat athletic one. And not to say that one is preferred, but for example, there's costume pieces that have like strappies, elastic strappies. And imagine a more curvy woman wearing these like strappy outfits where it creates these kind of like bulges. And I don't know why people in our culture think that that's not hot. I think that's so beautiful. You know, when she's wearing those tight things and you can see the way that her skin is indented from it, you can create more shapes. And that's kind of what drag has taught me about burlesque, is that you can use costuming to create shapes in your body. And when you have more to work with, you can create more shapes. And that's what corseting is, right? Like, it's just, it's so beautiful. And
it goes back to the curating yourself as a work of art.
Yes.
So in our last couple of minutes, let's talk about the show itself, because it's not just burlesque, but you mentioned drag.
Yes.
And also cabaret. So let's talk about drag here on the Central Coast.
My first drag show, I remember seeing this drag queen up in upstate New York. My college teacher took me. For extra credit, we could go to this drag show. I'm so glad. And her name was Shasta Cola. And she did a piece to Total Eclipse of the Heart. And I remember just looking at her and being like, A, she's so beautiful. Her legs are the nicest female legs I think I've ever seen. And just seeing how the female form was impersonated made me pay more attention to feminine characteristics and feminine qualities that I could then start to bring out in my burlesque.
And that's what I love about the idea of drag, is that it is a glorifying of women as art, but as presented by a man. I mean, it's such a beautiful way of honoring women. And as you said, women can learn, I think, what real beauty looks like when you see it embodied by a man.
Totally. I've learned more about how to be a woman from men. From men who are drag artists and just, you know, makeuping, costuming, and how to carry yourself on stage as a woman. Mm-hmm. And also what's cool is different drag queens take on different female personas, which also illuminates how many different feminine energies there are. There isn't just one.
Exactly.
There's so many.
Right. Because sensuality and sexuality isn't just one stereotypical way of a woman behaving. Every woman has some inherent sense of erotica inside of them that can be shared, as well as men. I don't want to be too one-sided, because I think in some ways women have been freed to express themselves in ways that we couldn't 20, 30 years ago, especially when I was younger. But now I think the emerging sexuality is in men, finding this place for men to be able to not be ashamed, to be able to express themselves with passion or with love or with, you know, sensuality in ways that they've never really been able to. It's always kind of like the YMCA macho man thing that we expect of men sexually. But
we do have a male burlesque dancer. We call it boylesque.
And so how has this experience doing burlesque changed your relationship, your marriage?
Well, it's changed me, right? And when I changed, it changed all the relationships in my life. It made me more assertive, made me communicate what I want. And what's funny is, you know, I still struggle with that. I still struggle with communicating what I want, but it was just a huge step forward. Gosh, it's hard to pick things up. I think it's changed my relationship with women more so than anything else. I've always had kind of a contentious relationship with women. I felt, you know, like if you try to be beautiful, women hate you. Mm-hmm. Or if you don't, like what can I do to get along with women? And it just really, really helped me celebrate women. And for example, I love commenting to women now on just how they curate their look. I have probably more woman friends than man friends, which is like the first time in my life. And it feels so good to have like the feminine community.
To support each other and not be in competition.
Yeah.
Yeah. To celebrate how beautiful you are together and not for trying to vie for attention. It's a whole different way of being. So for people that are looking for an opportunity to check out what you do and what Glitterotica does, how can they find out more about the show this weekend?
Well, you can go to the website, glitteroticaburlesque.com, spelled like glitter, like merging into erotica. So Glitterotica Burlesque.
And we'll put a link up with the show so people can find it.
And then you can just see a list of performers that are in the show this weekend and where to get tickets. And also the blog is on there.
Yes. And so if you want to find anything more about Alex and the work she does, you can read her blog, which kind of started this whole show at glitterotica.com. I want to thank you for coming in and sharing your story and being open to this and, I don't know, kind of creating a new way of expressing our love here on the Central Coast. This has been a conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. And, you know, as we move forward into our Valentine's celebrations, I just want to leave you with a couple tips. Chocolate flowers, fantastic. But this year, try something different. Maybe send some flirty texts to your significant other in the morning. You know, say, I look forward to seeing you later. Or leave sticky notes in places around the house or in their car. Because the best part about our sensuality and our sexuality is the buildup to whatever the event is going to be. So spend some time on the buildup this year. Send a text, leave a note, make a phone call. Make them know that you're thinking about them and looking forward to whatever may be coming up later on tonight. And then who knows where it's going to go. Thank you very much for being a part of the show. You can find me at Elizabeth at thereluctanttherapist.com. You can also send us an email to Elizabeth at thereluctanttherapist.com and listen to previous shows at kcbx.org.
Feel it, baby.